Passion, drive, and patience. The formula for winning championships is also what keeps your ride or die alive. eBay Motors has everything you need to maintain your vehicle and level it up to peak performance. Superchargers, roof racks, exhaust kits, LED headlights, and more. Whether you're into speed, power, or style, eBay Motors has you covered. With over 122 million parts for your number one ride or die, you'll always find exactly what you're looking for. And with eBay Guaranteed Fit, your part is guaranteed to fit your ride every time or your money back. Because with eBay Motors, you're burning rubber, not cash. With all the parts you need at the prices you want, it's easy to make your car the MVP and bring home huge wins. Keep your ride or die alive at ebaymotors.com. Eligible items only. Exclusions apply. See ebaymotors.com.
Support for this podcast comes from Frito-Lay and the 2023 Snack Bracket Championship. The Frito-Lay Snacker Challenge is underway, and fans are voting on their favorite snacks to crown champion. We're talking about primetime matchups between the best 64 snacks in the land. Will Ruffles Ridges reign supreme? Can Doritos defend their dynasty? Or will Smart Food use their smarts for a surprise upset? Only you can decide. Get in on all the action for a chance to win up to $1,000 or a year's worth of snacks. Let your snacks be heard. Just go to FritoLaySnackIt.SBNation.com to vote and enter for a chance to win. No purchase necessary. Sweepstakes ends April 3rd, 2023. Void where prohibited. Year's worth of snacks awarded in the form of 52 coupons, each good for one bag of chips. See official rules at FritoLaySnackIt.SBNation.com.
What's up, buds?
Check away and now the counter. Here come the Caps. Kuznetsov gets loose. Evgeny coming down the middle. A shot. And it comes in over. He scores. He scores. Evgeny Kuznetsov wins it for Washington. It's off to the third round. The Demons have been exercised.
Welcome back to Jay Prisner Radio. I'm your host, Greg Young. And after a little bit of a hiatus, which had to do with some personal health issues, I am back doing Jay Prisner Radio, and I figure no one better to welcome me back from a bit of a pause than Samantha Pell, a longtime friend of the podcast. So Samantha, how are you doing today?
Doing good, you know, just kind of getting through it, finally going to get back to some games here after a long stretch of none. So yeah, happy to be back.
Yeah. And I mean, I guess they have like two games upcoming or whatever. And then they have another massive stretch off, which I would imagine is because of COVID, but it's gotta be kind of just annoying to have to deal with as a beat writer. You're kind of, I would imagine, out of the groove a little bit, huh?
Yeah, it's definitely kind of weird. I mean, this last week, you know, the Montreal game was postponed in Montreal. The team is supposed to have like an extra off day there before they kind of did this back-to-back. And then they kind of just have their three straight practice days. And then next week as well, they're going to have another stretch of like 4 days off where they have to try to fill up kind of the space and either do practice or days off. So it's definitely a really weird schedule. And I'm sure it's just way different than everyone's used to.
Oh, yeah. And we'll get into, you know, I have a question kind of later about how it's going to impact the players and everything like that, having all this up and down. But I think before we get into that, just I was curious about some updates from the last couple of days, because the Caps have been battling both COVID and non-COVID injury, or a COVID and non-COVID illnesses. So I guess like maybe let's start with Orlov, Dmitry Orlov, who I think left practice, but it seems like was back. And, you know, I don't know, kind of curious about your status with him, because he's kind of interesting, because if he's back and Theravari is back, which it looks like Theravari is, then we finally get the kind of six stable defensemen that Laviolette's been wanting all year.
Yeah, absolutely. With Orlov, you know, he was back at practice today. I guess I'm trying to think what day it is. Thursday. He was back at practice on Thursday after missing Wednesday's practice because of that upper body injury. And we talked to him after practice today, and he basically said he was fine. He felt good. He kind of just joked about the injury, just said he needed some rest. Clearly that was not the case, but he seems good to go. Obviously trainers, doctors will take a look at him before the game against St. Louis on Friday, but everything seems good there. I guess in terms of Samsonov too, he was another player that was hurt a couple of days ago. It seemed like he just kind of left the ice in a little bit of discomfort at the end of practice, but Peter Laviolette said Thursday that Orlov and Samsonov should be good to go, obviously, barring anything unexpected in the next day.
Which, of course, you know, particularly with Samsonov and COVID, right? You know, like you, right. you wouldn't rule anything out. But yeah, so hopefully he can dodge it this time, I guess. But all right, so that was helpful with Samsonov. I guess I would imagine that Vitek would probably get a start against St. Louis, right? You know, given the kind of weirdness with Samsonov, or do you kind of just think, oh, it's like it's all systems go for both of them?
Yeah, I think Vitek is actually interesting because I keep on forgetting that he was in COVID protocol.
Yes.
For such a long time. And I don't know, I think we saw it with Samsonov when he was in COVID protocol a couple of times. He took a lot of time to come back. And, you know, whether that was the fatigue and the physical factors of, you know, sitting in your room for whatever it was originally, the 14 days, that takes a toll on you. And with Vitek, I mean, it was 10. He didn't get kind of the shortened five of some of the guys that are getting now. So I think with him, you know, maybe he does need more time. Laviolette seemed to think that he would be good to go for these games if needed, but there's nothing, you know, pretty firm there. I know the team called up Fakali to the taxi squad, so obviously he's an option there as well. But I would say it seems like everyone's good to go. But again, I mean, they could be playing it really safe this weekend too.
Sure. That makes sense. And I guess the next kind of order of business to go after is TJ Oshie and Nicholas Backstrom. I almost mixed up the names a little bit there. both had illnesses that were not COVID, it seems like, right? I guess Backstrom classified it as the flu. So are we expecting them to go, you know, to go to St. Louis? Obviously, that's Oshie's kind of former team and everything like that, although like he's been there a number of times since. It's probably not that big of a deal for him. But like, right. I mean, are we expecting them in St. Louis? Like kind of what's the status with Backstrom and Oshie?
Yeah, that's another great question that I don't have firm answers to.
That's okay.
At the time today after practice, Peter Laviolette really couldn't even tell us if either were traveling on this two-game road trip, which is never a great sign. I mean, both were out all week because of this kind of flu situation. Laviolette even went as far to say both are at different stages kind of in their return. So it sounds like one player might be better than the other. And at this point, we really don't know who that is. You know, with Backstrom, he's been in and out of the lineup. I mean, so much, right? Like he didn't play for the majority of the season. He comes back for a game, ends up on the COVID list, and then comes back, plays two games, ends up with the flu. So really like his body, I mean, physically has to be taking a huge hit. I'm sure mentally it's tough as well. And then with Oshie, he's also been battling the injuries and, you know, now the non-COVID situation. So I think, honestly, I have no clue who's actually going to be in the lineup tomorrow, who was even on the team playing today. But I have a feeling that one of them is going to play tomorrow.
Yeah, and I guess kind of that's a fitting kind of comment with my last injury question, which is kind of the quote-unquote catch-all category, right? Of, you know, I'm kind of curious, you know, we're at a point now, I think I heard that Carl Hagelin, right, was like in street clothes was the rumor today. I guess I'm kind of curious, like, is there any other player that I should watch out for that they're like that they've been battling? Or, you know, honestly, Samantha being out a little bit, it's been hard to kind of keep track with all of the things that have been going on with their roster.
Yeah, no, for sure. Today, I mean, Ovechkin, Kuznetsov, Carlson, and Hagelin all took maintenance days.
Oh, yeah.
According to the team. So, I mean, when you look at it like that, it seems like, you know, there's no issues there. Laviolette said he just didn't want some of these guys who have been taking a lot of minutes practicing three straight days. And Carl Hagelin was, I guess, thrown in the mix of those other three.
Sure.
So, yeah, that situation we really don't have any clarity on. But it seemed like, again, at this point, Laviolette said everything's fine. They should be, you know, kind of good to go this weekend. But really, as we've seen all season with the Caps, it seems like everything's fine one day and you wake up the next morning and it's a completely different situation than you thought it was.
Yeah. And okay, so I want to take a step back from all of this. You know, I had categories of updates on the craziness and then what has the craziness done to their play? And I guess I'm kind of curious about that and kind of your perspective, because I mean, the Caps from, I think, a kind of team-wide standpoint, you know, before all of this kind of craziness started a few weeks ago, they'd been plugging along, right? I mean, they had been, I think, playing reasonably well. And then all the kind of COVID stuff starts NHL wide, really. And, it's hard for me to look at these games that they've been playing lately and know whether to take them super seriously or not, given just the instability in throughout the lineup. So I guess kind of like, what do you think this craziness has done to their play? And do we take these last few games seriously?
Yeah, I mean, it's so hard to judge because I feel like even when the Caps are facing so much adversity and the craziness and you had all the young kids making their debuts, like it felt like this team was still really good. Mm-hmm. It was the question of, is this sustainable? Like there was just basically a waiting game to get all their veteran guys back. And since they've gotten most of their veteran guys back, it, for some reason, at least to me, maybe the play has dropped off. Yeah. And I don't exactly know why. Maybe it's just kind of this weird midseason lull, the pause, COVID, everything kind of back to back, but it seems like maybe they're in this little lull that needs help. The power play obviously needs a lot of help.
Yes.
You have players like Connor McMichael who are not getting a lot of minutes. Daniel Sprong, I'm not sure exactly where his slot in the lineup is, if at all, moving forward. The defense has obviously gotten messed up with all the yes. COVID stuff. So oddly, even though they're almost close to a full lineup, they don't really seem like the team that they were maybe a couple months ago. But then again, you look at the standings and there they are at the top. So who am I to really judge that? They're still collecting. Yeah, I don't know. They're still collecting points and they need to collect points. It just seems like they aren't as dominant when they're doing so.
Well, because and the interesting thing, right, is that the Capitals, if you look at kind of years past, they've had lulls. It's I actually think one of our first appearances with you on was talking about a Caps lull, because they typically get a huge division lead, which again, they don't have a huge division lead this year. But what they do have this year is a huge lead on getting a playoff spot. Last time mm-hmm. I looked, I think it was like they had a 15-point lead or something on Detroit. So functionally, you would basically say the Caps are a playoff team at this point, right? So on one hand, you would say, okay, this is a veteran team. They have a 15-point lead on a playoff spot. It doesn't seem like they particularly care who they would play in the playoffs, which are still 4 months away. Maybe this is just a lull from a veteran team. But at the same time, you've also had all this COVID craziness. So I guess it's kind of a tough balance, right, to say exactly analytically what's been the kind of root cause behind their downturn in play, which I've seen too.
Right. Yeah. I just think it overall, I think it has to be just like the personnel, and maybe it feels like the theme of the last couple of games has just been like, has adversity finally like caught up to you guys?
Yeah.
Like, has it finally cracked because you were doing so well throwing in players left and right? And then it seemed like the pause just really threw everyone for a loop.
Yes.
But I think the pause, at least for the Caps, came at a time where maybe they could have started building on something. You think of the Philly game, the New York, the Isles games, like those two games could have been more wins. And then you have all the Canadian games kind of being pushed around. And so, yeah, I think at this point, it's just hard to judge. And it seems like we're kind of starting fresh again. And it doesn't seem like they're starting fresh from a great place.
Yeah. Yeah. And speaking of kind of deterioration of play, it seems like the kind of trend lately for the Capitals, at least the last couple of games, has been spotting teams' leads only to come back. This happened the last couple of games, kind of dramatically with the Devils game, where you would really say the Capitals were kind of just gifted a goal in a game they probably did not deserve mm-hmm. to even get a point after. I would imagine Peter Laviolette is probably not thrilled with that development. No.
Yeah, no, definitely not. It seems like at different points this season, they've had kind of those, I think of the Carolina game. I think they were up 2-0, Carolina comes back. Dmitry Orlov has kind of the game winner. I think that was the last power play goal that wasn't Alex Ovechkin.
Yep, that is correct.
Was that Carolina game? So,
and it was kind of a weird goal, if I remember too.
Yeah, and it was a very weird goal. And I just remember that game as kind of being the start of the Caps are blowing leads in the third situation, and they kind of continue to do it, and it's being brought up again and again. And honestly, I feel like as long as I've covered the Caps for the last three seasons, it's kind of been a theme of, that the Caps maybe come out, I think Nick Dowd said it this year, where they're kind of bored, and they maybe don't take an opponent as seriously as they should. And then all of a sudden, they're kind of either behind or they get ahead by luck. And then in the third, it kind of turns south again. So I just think it's a struggle for this team to maybe stay engaged for the 60 minutes, which sounds so easy and cliche. For some reason, it just seems to happen on random nights for no reason.
Yeah. And I mean, with a team, like we said, with a lot of veterans that, you know, they've been to the playoffs and kind of done this a number of times, you know, it's it can be tough, although, you know, I think with maybe, I don't know, it's tough too, because I think this year has felt like the Ovechkin goal chase to Gretzky feels like kind of a thing that's in the back of everyone's mind almost every night now. So I don't know, like, I mean, does the team at all stress any motivation from that kind of thing? Or is it still like they're not going to talk about that kind of thing and just kind of focus on the overall play?
Yeah, I feel like it was definitely a focus, I would say, like at the beginning of the season, and everyone's, you know, asking about Gretzky's record and can he do it? And then when Alex kind of starts to get hot and he's, you know, chasing all these records again and breaking them and almost now to Jagr, like, I feel like it's just a normal common thing. Yeah. Sounds very odd, but I feel like for the
it's cast, remarkable, like, right? He's passing like Jaromir Jagr, and it's like, no, that's just another guy, you know, it's fine. It's just another record.
Right, exactly. And I feel like when, you know, the Caps think about it, they're like, oh yeah, like that's what like Ovi does. Like he goes, he scores goals, he's like a leader for our team, like they expect it. So I really don't think it's as much of a distraction as maybe people would think it is. I just think it's your captain needs to score goals, and he just happens to be Alex Ovechkin, who just happens to be chasing Wayne Gretzky's record. But yeah, I think it's definitely, it's a main point of the season. It's always going to be a main point of this season, and it will be until he retires.
Absolutely. All right. Well, kind of getting back to the ice a little bit. So if Dmitry Orlov is back, are we expecting the kind of the stable deep pairs of Ferivari, Carlson, Orlov, Jensen, and TVR and Schultz back? And if we are, what has kind of being without those pairs meant to the Caps? Because it seems like, you know, going really before kind of the COVID craziness and TVR first being the guy to go out, that, you know, that this had been kind of a group of six that the Caps had been pretty stable on. So what do you think the effect could be of getting all of them back?
Yeah, I mean, I think it'd be really great for a team that probably needs that stability. I think they really depended on that for basically the entire part of the first half of the season, or whatever quarter part of the season that we're at, just because of all the movement up front with all the guys being out and the injuries and Backstrom. And they really depended on guys like Carlson and Ferivari and Orlov and Jensen. And they had all of these strong pairs that they could finally trust at any point. In the game, they kind of lost that in these last few weeks. So I definitely think it's super important. I think maybe what's interesting is who'd be the seventh guy, just because Kempney's come up, you know, obviously Laviolette trusts Erwin. I don't think Chalosky is in that mix, but I am kind of curious about who would be the first guy kind of up off the bench for them if Orlov couldn't go.
Yeah, I'm kind of curious what you think about Kempney's kind of return too, because I mean, from a analytics nerd guy, you know, and I wasn't super impressed maybe with his return, but it seems like people like were higher on him maybe than I would have thought. So I don't know, kind of what did you see about Kempney's play kind of with a few games that he's been back?
Yeah, I mean, I think I've liked it overall. I think, you know, I asked Laviolette about him the other day. I asked if, you know, Kempney's kind of done enough to be a full-time NHL guy again. And Laviolette basically said, you know, he's played well. He came up, he did his job, but he doesn't see the six changing. You know, he likes what he has. Sure. That doesn't mean that he couldn't be a seventh. But I think at this point, Kempney's, it's just hard to tell if he could be above Erwin in terms of the trust and the confidence from the coaching staff, just because of the ties of Erwin and Laviolette from, you know, their Nashville days and how he's been around the team more than Kempney. But I do think he probably deserves a shot. He hasn't made any kind of, you know, blatant errors or anything that, you know, maybe we did see during preseason or in the past. So I think for now he earned his spot up for these few games. And once everyone's healthy again, it's probably right that he is seven or eight. But at this point, it kind of looks like he's eight.
Yeah. Okay. That makes sense. And, I would imagine too, if you're Laviolette, Erwin, probably a safer guy to have as a 70, right? You know, someone who's probably a little more defensively stable. Kempney, you know, when he's playing at 100%, he can play very good defense, I would say, but kind of more of an on the ice kind of, you know, skating and kind of rushing guy. So you know, maybe Erwin having him as a 7D just from a kind of role standpoint might make a little more sense. No.
Yeah, definitely. And I think, again, just because Irwin's been around the team more this year, and he obviously like knows the systems left and right. And I feel like he's kind of the more veteran guy in that sense that Laviolette would kind of turn to and trust to more at this point.
Makes sense. Makes sense. All right. So I have two kind of more, I won't say negative questions, but a little more, you know, kind of not dire, that's also strong, but you know, maybe a little more kind of downcasty questions. So what I'm going to do is I'm going to ask one, we're going to take a break, and then I'm going to ask the other. So I think I'm going to start with the Capitals power play, which it has been horrible. Like, I think it's safe to say, right? It has been genuinely horrible. I've done analytics dives into it. It's looked just as bad from a kind of deep dive, you know, shot generation standpoint as it just kind of has percentages wise in terms of overall conversion rate. So I think, Samantha, I've been kind of crowdsourcing why I think their power play has been so bad. So I'm kind of curious your contribution to that. Kind of what do you think is going on with their power play right now?
I feel like it changes every night that I watch them. I really just feel like most nights, at least currently or lately, they've been getting chances. They just haven't been getting the right chances.
Yeah.
Which seems very odd to say. But I just feel like the options and whoever's choosing to shoot or not to shoot has been the wrong call. For a good amount of times, I think the one that pops into mind, I think Kuznetsov like had the puck basically like in the circle, and he just kind of stood there for a second and didn't know what to do with it. And I think he ended up passing it, but there's just some situations where I feel like maybe they just aren't capitalizing when they're supposed to be. And other times it seemed very, you know, surgical. John Carlson was in complete control of it. He knew where to go. And now it just seems like they're a little scattered. I think there were parts earlier in the year, maybe in the middle part, that Ovechkin was getting shot after shot after shot on the power play, and goalies were just blocking it, or players were, you know, jumping in and taking those block shots. So it just wasn't working. But that's kind of where I see them at right now. I don't think they need a complete overhaul, but it's definitely getting to the point where I think everyone's just a little frustrated.
Yeah. And I mean, just to kind of clarify, I know that some of the fans have been kind of at the Blaine Forsythe, the Blaine Forsythe firing camp. You don't see anything with that, right? You know, like, or do you actually? I'm kind of curious.
I personally don't see anything like that happening. I think it's hard because I think if the power play was actually that dire, I mean, at points last year, I think it was too, right? Like, yeah. I don't think it was all, you know, roses last year either. I think that change would have happened in the off season, and clearly it didn't. And I think right now it's, Laviolette has said kind of multiple times, he's been happy with how it's doing, even though it's not producing, he's been happy with the chances. And I just think at this point, it's going to be all up to, I mean, the players on the ice, honestly, the decisions that they're making and how they're executing. And in part, it is personnel and who Laviolette and Forsythe decide to kind of put out there. I mean, you can talk about the choice to maybe put Protas out there instead of a McMichael. You know, Sprong wasn't out there a few times, but again, big guys have been out. What do you really do? You're just kind of scrambling. Yeah. So long answer. I don't think he's in trouble, but would it shock me if he's not here next year? Probably not.
No, that makes sense. That makes sense. Yeah. And I mean, there's also something to the idea of not making even an assistant coaching change in a first place team, right? You know, there's probably, yeah, that seems a little unlikely at this point. Although I would definitely expect, I think, at least some kind of tactical adjustments, or at least I would hope there would be some with a power play that's now like almost the worst in the league, which is just crazy to say to me for the Washington Capitals.
Right. Yeah. And you just, I mean, overall, when you look at it, right, it's just like all the big guys who you think should be scoring and no one can really get it together. But it hasn't been, I don't think it's been like their zone entries or anything like that either.
No, I don't think really, it has. That's been the weird part, right?
Right. Because like, yeah. That's what it normally is.
Yeah, no. It's been strange. But we'll see, I guess, you know, they've had a few days of practice, and I guess we'll, assuming they have I would guess they'll have a full, assuming Backstrom is back and Oshie is back, which I guess, you know, who knows, but if they are back, then they'll have their kind of full complement of five power play, you know, their five regulars on the power play, which, you know, I think it's also maybe been a factor, right? You know, they just haven't had any kind of stability in their power play, just in terms of personnel.
Yeah, for sure. I think they've only had one game where their entire first power play unit was available. And I think that was the same game that they, for the first time all season, had all four of their centers.
Yes.
In the game. And then obviously everything happened with Eller getting sick and then Backstrom getting sick and everything. So yeah, it's been a little bit crazy, but they've had no stability there.
Nope, they have not. They have not. All right. With that, we're going to take a break. And then on the other side, I am going to ask Samantha about Connor McMichael's ice time, because that's been, I think, a kind of cause number one among the Capitals fan base, and a few other questions. So with that, stay tuned. Welcome back to Japers Rink Radio, still here with Samantha Pell. And all right, Samantha, my exact question that I wrote here on my little document is, okay, seriously, what is going on with Connor McMichael's ice time? So I ask you, okay, seriously, what is going on with Connor McMichael's ice time?
I honestly think it just reminds me of a Verona situation, or maybe even a Sprong situation. I just think with McMichael, he is a younger player. I know Laviolette has played younger players in the lineup before. Obviously, McMichael isn't out, right? He's not a healthy scratch. Yeah, he's still saying ice time. He's adjusted his role. I think maybe there's been a little bit of an adjustment period of trying to figure out if he's better at center or at wing. I think for McMichael, it's probably easier at wing. I think he's kind of said to us that there's kind of less responsibility, right? At wing, it's kind of freer. It's kind of like a TJ Oshie situation. Like TJ Oshie is by far and away better at wing, but he could play center. I think with McMichael, it's kind of like a McMichael Protas situation of where do you put these guys? Protas has been at center, he's been at wing. But I think with Protas, he's Laviolette just seems to like him a little bit more. In the lineup, I think because of his size, his physicality, what he can do on the ice. And for some reason, McMichael just isn't seeing kind of that upped ice time that maybe fans and others believe he should be. I'm pretty sure analytics say that McMichael is pretty solid.
Yeah, oh, he's been, he's been, he's been very, very good.
Okay. From that standpoint. I'm pretty sure, you know, everything kind of points to him as being, you know, doing everything he's supposed to do. Obviously he gets shots and he gets chances in games. He, you know, contributes on the rush when he's with kind of these veteran guys. I mean, we've seen it when he's with Oshie or Sherry, like it seems like he's in the middle of everything. Mm-hmm. It just seems like down the stretch when it gets to it in the third period is when his ice time completely goes away. And that's why, for the most part, when you look at the stat sheet at the end of the game, that's why his shifts aren't up. That's why his minutes are down. There's just something about the third period or when the game is tight and when they're chasing that the coaching staff just does not feel comfortable with them with. Maybe that's just age. Maybe that's defensively. I think that reminds me of a Daniel Sprong. Obviously, the coaching staff knows what he can do offensively, but they're still trying to work on that 200-foot game, and that's why he's been a healthy scratch a few times this season.
Do you think there's a kind of a long-term vision for how they want to handle McMichael? Because I mean, to kind of go back, actually before you were on the beat, the thing that comes to my mind is Kuznetsov's 2014 season, the first season under Trotz, where, you know, he was playing on the fourth line at times, and then, mm-hmm. you know, kind of as the year ramped up, he started getting a little more responsibility. Do you see the Capitals as having kind of a long-term vision for how they want to handle this? Because, I mean, from my standpoint, from his development, you know, if you're going to play him 6 minutes a night, why not just put him in Hershey and let him play double, triple that? So, I don't know, I guess I'm kind of curious, like, do you see a vision for kind of where this is going?
I see no vision, which is a bad sign. Yeah. But I do think keeping him up here is just, okay, we want him to get NHL time, right? We want to get him these minutes. We want to put him in these situations that maybe aren't the top situations, right? We give those to kind of the veteran guys that they really trust at this point in the season where they need to be collecting points and they need to come back and win some of these games that maybe have been on the fence so far. I do think I'm just not sure if sending him back to Hershey is the right decision overall. Like, yes, he would be playing more minutes and he probably would be getting more of that confidence boost down there, but maybe it is time that they completely try to integrate him in the NHL. And that starts with, you know, his, albeit small, but like 6 to 8 minutes a night. And then they just want to kind of see where it goes. I think with him, there's probably more, I see more of a future maybe with him in the lineup versus Sprong, which maybe is right or not right to say, but I think at this point, it seems like there's a little bit more leeway for him. And I think if the coaching staff didn't have a trust in him, I don't think he would be playing in this lineup with some of these guys.
Well, yeah, I mean, the comparison with Sprong is interesting, right? Because you would say if Daniel Sprong is not scoring goals, like kind of, you know, what's the value he's really providing to the lineup? Whereas, you know, McMichael, at least for what it's worth, as I've said this a couple of other places too, that he crashes the net more than I thought. And it's kind of been interesting that for whatever reason, it hasn't seemed to mesh with Laviolette's system because, you know, he does, it seems like to me at least, a lot of things that a, you know, kind of NHL coach would like from a rookie. Granted, there's been some defensive lapses. Every rookie has defensive lapses, right? But like, I don't know, it's been interesting to me that he hasn't really kind of fit with what Laviolette wants so far.
No, I definitely think so. It is really weird that it feels like he's not the same mold of a player. Like, I don't know, like even like a Connor Sherry or a Garnet Hathaway or some of these players that seemingly get a lot of praise from Laviolette. Connor McMichael just never seems to be that guy that gets sort of that attention and that kind of attention to detail there. But yeah, for some reason, I'm not sure why it's not clicking. But it seems like with the limited time he has, you do see him on the ice, which is always good. And he does have your defensive lapses from time to time, but I'm not sure if more minutes is the right answer either. You know, it could be just trial and error. Do you really want to give him, you know, 14, 15 minutes? Is that too much? Is that taking away from guys like, you know, the Alex Ovechkins of the world, or even a line of like Sherry, Eller and Oshie? So I really think it's hit or miss. And I think we're really going to see where he belongs probably in the next, I would think, 20 games.
Yeah, that's going to be interesting. All right. Okay. All right, fans. I've given you Connor McMichael time, so be happy with me. I've probably given him more time than the Caps will give him in a game. So there you go. all right. So I have a couple more kind of questions here. You wrote about Nick Jensen recently, and he's been a player that I have been interested in. Because I think that there's an interesting kind of debate to be had about, you know, how much he's improved maybe the last couple of years versus maybe the Caps just finding the right role for him. And, you know, it's hard to play aside from Dmitry Orlov and not really look good, I would say. But I don't know, like you wrote about Jensen, like I'm kind of curious, do you think there's been tangible, like really big improvement in the last couple of years? And kind of what do you think is the root cause of that?
Yeah, I think with Jensen, it really comes down to, I think it's finding the right fit in the right role and kind of set the expectations of what he was coming in and what he currently is. I think, you know, I talked to Brian McCollum about him the other day and, you know, they signed him immediately to that 4-year, $10 million extension. And some people at the time were like, okay, that's a little weird. You haven't even seen him. Like, what's up with that? He really had an up and down season. You know, he was a healthy scratch at points. I think it was the 19-20 season. And I think a lot of fans, his name was kind of thrown out at the deadline in 2020 of maybe the Caps are leaving him available. He's not really clicking.
And healthy scratched, I think, a couple of times, you know, that kind
right,
of thing.
Yeah. Yeah. And Brian McClellan was basically saying, you know, at the end of the day, it kind of seemed like confidence wise, the previous coaching staff just didn't really have as much confidence as Peter Laviolette does in Nick Jensen. And I think that plays a huge role in it, of just giving him the flexibility and the leeway to kind of work in the system under Laviolette and how he operates. And I think honestly, the year with Chara probably did wonders for Nick Jensen.
Would imagine so.
And, you know, obviously anyone playing, it's kind of like an Orlov situation, right? Anyone playing alongside Chara is going to have some type of boost, whether that's mentally or on the ice. And in Nick Jensen's case, it was both. Yes. And it helped the team overall. He was put in situations in the defensive zone and, you know, at the end of the game to kind of help the team overall. And it probably just helped after just a really, I think Todd Rudin described him as a work in progress in like 2019 and 20. So I just think overall he needed to find exactly his fit in Washington, what he wanted to do, what he was expected to do. And I think at this point in his career with Orlov, you know, he's not a top pair defenseman. He is a top four defenseman, but I just remember a couple of years ago, we were even saying, should he even be in Washington, right? Like, is he even good enough to be on the third pair? And now he's kind of a no doubt. Of course, he's going to be paired next to Orlov. He's a top four defenseman. He's going to average, you know, 19 plus minutes a night. He's going to play on the PK. So I just personally, I think he's found his right fit. He's found his right role. He's obviously flashed the offensive power, but he's not John Carlson, right?
No. He's not a TV real. No, but he's like, better, I think, with that than at least he was made fun of at first, right?
Exactly.
Like, because he had not scored a goal. I think it was for like an obscene amount of time. And then he gets one, and it seems like, you know, every once in a while now he finds the back of the net.
Yeah, exactly. I just think for him, it's all about consistency. And it's, if you don't notice him, it's probably a good thing.
Yeah.
And for him, I think he knows it as well. He was kind of saying the other day, he's like, you know what, if I can just go out, do my job, walk the blue line, like maybe, you know, walk past the forward or something and make a good play, like that's fine with me. But overall, he's like, I'm the last line of defense. Like, I want to be the guy that doesn't, you know, get blown past every game. And I feel like we haven't, at least me personally, I just can't remember a time where I'm like, oh, whoa, like that's a bad play from Nick Jensen. Whereas maybe I've said that about a Carlson or someone like that.
Oh, so or for it, better or for worse. I mean, one of my favorite Washington Capitals, no doubt, but Dmitry Orlov, you know, is a very like kind of high risk, high event player, right? But it's been interesting pairing him with Jensen, who also moves really well, that how well those two seem to fit together.
Yeah, absolutely. So I think for him, it'll be interesting kind of moving forward where the Capitals see him. I mean, he's 31. This is his third year of his 4-year deal. So I'm kind of curious to see where it all goes, but you know, ahead of him, you have a guy like Firavari who really knows where his ceiling's at, but it seems like he's going to be in this league for a very, very long time. And how do they kind of work with that? But as for now, I just think Jensen works well in the six. And I think for the first time in a long time, people can say, okay, there's really no question marks there. Like there's a lot of other question marks around this team.
Yeah. Well, I mean, for better or for worse, it seems like the Caps have their six defensemen, and as long as they're healthy, there's not really going to be a ton of room aside from them. So, you know, I guess just for those six, it would seem like having that stability just generally, obviously, the last few weeks aside, you know, has kind of done really just wonders for all of them.
Yeah, no, absolutely. I think for sure. And, you know, obviously the blue line's had so many question marks coming into the season. You know, overall, who's going to fit where? Is this really going to work? Firavari can actually play? That now I think it's worked better than they could have imagined.
Absolutely. All right. So I have one more question for you at the end of this. So you've been kind of, I guess, knee deep in, and we've all kind of had an education in the NHL's COVID response and kind of COVID protocols. And I guess I'm kind of curious, like you have friends, obviously, and, you know, work with other leagues. I guess I'm kind of curious what you think about the NHL's kind of COVID response compared to, you know, what you've seen kind of sports-wide, US-wide. You know, it seems like really, I mean, Omicron has been, I think, kind of a unique animal just in terms of just how transmissible it is. And then, you know, maybe it being a little less serious than the other ones, you know, you kind of say, okay, what exactly is the right response here? So I guess I'm kind of curious, how do you think, like, what do you think about what the league has done? What do you think about the league hasn't done? You know, it seems like there's been a kind of jumbled mess, but I'm kind of curious if you have any logical sense of kind of what's been going on.
Yeah, I mean, I think it starts with the pause. And how the NHL decided to do that. I think it was kind of a half-hearted rollout of trying to, you know, postpone games one by one instead of kind of just doing a blanket, let's stop the league for a week, reset everything for the Winter Classic situation. I think that might have been a smarter move overall. But, you know, the opposite argument is Omicron. We didn't really know a lot about it. It was spreading really fast. No one really knew how to handle it. If you took 3 to 4 days like the NHL did, would that really solve all your problems? No, as we've seen right now with games still being postponed. And then, I mean, you have the other factor of Canada. I mean, Canada is a really big factor right now of attendance. And, you know, obviously the NHL doesn't want to play games in Canada because of the revenue, and they want to postpone those games towards the end of the season. But how do you do that when you're now, I think it's up to 90 plus games that you have to reschedule, and you're trying to get everything done on time again. And it's kind of just a mess.
Yeah.
At least I think luckily no players have been, you know, I guess seriously sick in the last month or so, which has been good. It's been mild cases or asymptomatic. So from that standpoint, it seems like the league is handling that well, but I don't know. Personally, I think the league probably should have shut down for more than they did, or at least done it earlier.
Yeah.
It's just, it's hard because they went through COVID already for the last two seasons. They've, you know, lost billions in revenue. The teams have lost so much money. But at the end of the day, players already kind of sacrificed the Olympics because of all these postponements. I think the least they could do is make sure that everyone's healthy and good to go instead of kind of half playing games with taxi squads and yes. guys from the AHL. And even the names on the list today, I mean, Tarasenko was on the list today for the Blues. And it just seems like all these big names are having to come off for how many days and who knows how sick they are. And now with the flu and everything kind of thrown together is just seemingly a mess.
Yeah. Or I mean, there's Capitals that are being called up who, like, I keep touching to the team and I've just straight up never heard of, like, a Hunter Shepherd, right? Like, you know, it's like, I've got no idea who that is.
Yes. Yeah. It's just kind of a weird year. And it feels like at the end of the day, like, I feel like the last two seasons have kind of been, you know, asterisks, right? With COVID of, oh, well, you know, the first one was shortened and then you got a super shortened season. Now this season, how much does it count because of Omicron and everyone kind of moving in and out, but now there's shortened quarantine periods in the US of 5 days. And it just seems like another mess. And I'm not sure exactly when we're going to get out of it.
Yeah.
But I think honestly, as long as the NHL has kind of the majority of, I guess you could say it's blessing from its players of how they're at least trying to handle it, I think it's good. I know a lot of players, I think Carter Hart talked about it the other day, of just how the protocol is ridiculous in general and how it doesn't make any sense. But you can't just have, I don't think you can just have players going out and who have tested positive right away and playing games. So it's a hard balance, and where I think everyone's still learning. It's just kind of unfortunate that the NHL is kind of caught in the middle of it kind of again.
Yeah, and I think it seems like the idea at this point is kind of just to muddle through it. No.
Yeah, it's definitely play through with whoever you have. And if that's only 10 forwards, then I guess it's only 10 forwards.
I guess so. All right. Well, it makes it hard to kind of have any like idea of how to value these games, just as me as an analyst and you as a beat writer. So I guess we'll just try to muddle through it too, right? I guess there's no real other way.
Exactly. Yeah. We're just kind of here just doing our jobs, I guess, and seeing what happens every night.
There you go. All right. Well, with that, Samantha, this has been a blast. It's nice to have you back on. Nice to have kind of back in this. It's nice to kind of be back in the swing of things. And I guess the only way that I can feel back in the swing of things with the podcast is to apparently have you appear on. So thanks for being flexible and agreeing to come on again. Where can people find you in your various works?
Yeah, everything is usually on my Twitter at Samantha J. Pell, and then at WashingtonPost.com. And yeah, kind of like you said, just wrote about Nick Jensen. We'll have something on Tom Wilson probably in the next few days or so, just about Olympic stuff. And, you know, he's about to hit 600 games on Friday against St. Louis. I think he's the fifth fastest Capitals player to do that in the franchise. And yeah, so just kind of talk to Tom about a lot of things, talk to Joel Ward about him. So yeah. That'll be out.
There you go. That's exciting. All right. And with that, if you like the show, please rate or subscribe, review. I feel bad saying, you know, please give us 5 stars given I was off the last couple of weeks, but hey, I had a good reason. So there you go. But yeah, you can, if you like the show, you can find it at Jabers and Radio on Twitter, and you can find me at @GregY_JR, and you can find my writing whenever I do it, which I'm hoping to have a couple of things out in the next couple of weeks. We'll see. You can find that at Jabers Rank. So with that, I think we're gonna have a normal show with Adam and I next week. So look forward to that, and we'll be in touch.